I'd like to invite Fred Krall to come forward.
I was hoping you could say Debbie is next. This is such a formidable place to be sitting in this seat, and there's so many good people who've made this happen. And so anyway, thank you to the monks and the nuns, the lay people, for inviting me here and listening to my words. It's really nice because Mark and Susan have talked about things that I wasn't going to talk about, and certainly they came before me, so they had a different perspective. It seems like telescopic time. I was going to say logarithmic time, but then I'd probably lose all of you. That everything was so crystallized, and I knew what was happening from week to week and month to month a long time ago. And then 5 years went by. Maybe we had a celebration, and then 10 years, and then the last 10 years, just as, who was it? Ajahn Visuddhi said, they went by in a flash. An eternity went by in a flash, yeah. So I'm thinking back to a time when I was working as a scientist in Berkeley, and I had taken the afternoon off to go to San Francisco. And I'm standing on the sidewalk, kind of looking out. It was probably foggy and windy, or maybe it wasn't foggy and windy. And something big had happened, but I knew it was a big thing, but there was no celebration. There was just no acknowledgement. Just, I was like, this feels weird. Okay, so no celebration, but something big happened. So some years earlier than that, I first met Buddhism because my Thai teacher, I decided to take a gap year, that's what it's called now, between graduate school and going to work in Geneva, Switzerland. And so I went to Thailand, and I had no idea why I picked Thailand. It was just easy to get a job there, I guess. So I got a job in Chiang Mai, and my teacher had said, okay, if you want to know Thailand, you need to know Buddhism. So I picked up some books in the bookstore, and I got to read Ajahn Buddhadasa, who wrote in a very clear books. And being a scientist, I found that everything, you know, was fine. It agreed with what I knew, and there was, it was a lot of great wisdom to be had there. And I was reading those books, and then I got a book by Ajahn Chah, and the last or second to last chapter said, just start doing it, something like that. Just do it. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to meditate. But I can't sit cross-legged very well, so I wasn't really into it. And then I got this article from a friend, and he'd done a retreat at Wat Rangpung in Chiang Mai, and it had him pictured doing walking meditation. I'm like, I'm going to do that. That's really cool. I can do walking. So I did. I went there for 5 days. They wanted me to stay for 40 days, but I stayed for 5 days. And there was bowing and then sitting and walking. It was really intense. But I got really, really calm, and I really liked the routine. But then it was time to go to Switzerland, and I thought, okay, I'm leaving Thailand. I'm going to Switzerland. There just must be absolutely no Buddhists anywhere near Geneva, Switzerland, which I thought for a while. But then I got sent this book, and inside the cover was the name of a monastery in England, Chithurst Monastery. So I wrote to them saying, is there any Buddhist monastery or any Buddhist in Switzerland? And they go, yeah, there is a branch monastery, Dhammapala, just a train ride away. And that just like here, the monks would come once a month or twice a month, I think. So that's how I got into this lineage. My first teacher was Ajahn Tiradamo. But then I wanted to go back to the U.S. And in the back of our newsletter, there was like all the places that you can go in this tradition, all the monasteries, and 10 Arbor Street. So in the back of this Swiss newsletter, I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to go back to San Francisco. So I went on a job search, And it was Thanksgiving. It was probably the day before Thanksgiving, Wednesday night. I went to 10 Arbor Street, and there were like three of us. I was Debbie, and I don't know who else was there. Probably Mark, and maybe Catherine and Stephanie. And that was the little group. We did mindfulness of listening to Mark's breathing, which was a really good practice. We listened to cassette tapes of monks. But then Ajahn Amaro came really soon thereafter. It was 1993. And just like with Susan, maybe it took a few more visits before you got invited to the Sangapala board at that time. So I was on the board, and Ajahn Kirunadamo came from Seattle to visit the first board meeting I had. But what I found is that there were some people with incredible kindness and faith, like Debbie and Mark, who had the vision and wisdom to believe in this project of starting a monastery, which had its starts and stops and so on. And so I went there every Wednesday and enjoyed the visits by Ajahn Amaro, who was certainly very energetic. And his talks at the time were very literary. They came with many quotations from a notebook, so I was then on the board, and we had no money. We had our budget balance sheet was really simple. We spent $13,000 on running a retreat in, say, Angela Center, and then we raised $13,000 in fees to run the retreat. And then we're going to make have a monastery. And as you have heard, we were aided by a donation of the land up to my left of a lot of land that I thought was absolutely impossible to live on, but I guess you proved it otherwise. So in my first time on the board, we had, after Susan left, we had four of us. It was Mark and Debbie and Noel, who's come all the way from the East Coast to be with us. Noel had great concentration for about 1 hour. He was the young guy. I realize he's only 3 years younger than I am. He would be really attentive, and then after an hour, he would just lose all energy, and he's like, "I can't do meetings anymore." And we did pretty well. And our big struggle that year was just, what are we going to do with the fact that this side of the mountain to my right, with a house and electric utility hookups and so on, was for sale. So our struggle was to buy it, not to buy it, not to buy it, faith, doubt, and so on. And every different aspect of the human psyche was represented by a board member or two. And people know the story better, and maybe Ajahn Amaro is going to finish the story, but I got elected to be president, and my first act as a president was to sign a pile of real estate paper about this high. And I kind of got out in the street, bleary-eyed, and Ajahn Amaro and probably Ajahn Kirunadamo, who was either about to become Anagarika Tom or just was Anagarika Tom, they were going off to this thing up here. And I was standing there on the sidewalk going, wait, where's the celebration? We just did this really big thing, and there was just nothing, me on the sidewalk. And then I realized a week ago that this is the celebration. It took 20 years, but it's just wonderful to see all of you here. And, I could recount what we did during my presidency, but all I remember is zoning meetings, because we were turning this into a church retreat. And I remember the bylaws. Maybe I was, that was my contribution with working with the first Arthur and the second Arthur. And we had our articles of incorporation and bylaws that let this be a legal foundation for having lay people and the Sangha own this land. They own the land. We provide the financial part of it. So it's thanks again for everybody who's made this possible in the last, whatever, 16 years since I stepped down as president and handed over to Jeannie Bendick.
Thank you very much, Fred.